My cheek was against the stone of the courtyard, but one eye was open enough for me to see that stars still shone through the broken latticework of the Galleria dome. I could not blink. My limbs and torso tingled with the pinpricks of returning sensation, as if my entire body had fallen asleep and was now coming painfully awake. It made me want to scream, but my jaw and tongue refused to work. Suddenly, I was lifted and propped against a stone bench so that I could see the courtyard and the dry fountain, which Rithmet Corbett had designed. The bronze Laocoon wrestled with bronze snakes in the flickering illumination of the pre-dawn meteor showers. "I'm sorry, Martin," came a familiar voice, "but this madness has to end." King Billy came into my field of view carrying a tall stack of manuscript. Other heaps of pages lay on the shelf of the fountain at the foot of the metal Trojan. An open bucket of kerosene sat nearby. I managed to blink. My eyelids moved like rusted iron. "The stun should wear off any minute," said King Billy. He reached into the fountain, raised a sheaf of manuscript, and ignited it with a flick of his cigarette lighter. "No!" I managed to scream through clenched jaws. The flames danced and died. King Billy let the ashes drop into the fountain and lifted another stack of pages, rolling them into a cylinder. Tears glistened on lined cheeks illuminated by flame. "You called it forth," gasped the little man. "It must be finished." I struggled to rise. My arms and legs jerked like a marionette's mishandled limbs. The pain was incredible. I screamed again, and the agonized sound echoed from marble and granite. King Billy lifted a fat sheaf of papers and paused to read from the top page. "Without story or prop but my own weak mortality, I bore the load of this eternal quietude, the unchanging gloom, and the three fixed shapes, ponderous upon my senses a whole moon. For by my burning brain I measure sure her silver seasons, shedded on the night, and ever day by day I thought I grew more gaunt and ghostly. Oftentimes I prayed, intense, that death would take me from the veil and all its burdens, gasping with despair of change. Hour after hour I cursed myself." King Billy raised his face to the stars and consigned this page to flame. "No!" I cried again, and forced my legs to bend. I got to one knee, tried to steady myself with an arm ablaze with pinpricks, and fell on my side. The shadow in the cape lifted a stack too thick to roll and peered at it in the dim light. Then I saw a wan face not pinned by human sorrows, but bright blanched by an immortal sickness which kills not. It works a constant change which happy death can put no end to. Deathwards, progressing to no death, was that visage. It had passed the lily and the snow, and beyond these I must not think now, though I saw that face. King Billy moved his lighter, and this and 50 other pages burst into flame. He dropped the burning papers into the fountain and reached for more. "Please," I cried, and pulled myself up, stiffening my legs against the twitches of random nerve impulses while leaning against the stone bench. "Please." The third figure did not actually appear, so much as allow its presence to impinge upon my consciousness. It was as if it always had been there, and King Billy and I had failed to notice it, until the flames grew bright enough. Impossibly tall, four-armed, molded in chrome and cartilage, the shrike turned its red gaze on us. King Billy gasped, stepped back, and then moved forward, to feed more kantos to the fire. Embers rose on warm drafts. A flight of doves burst from the vine-choked girders of the broken dome with an explosion of wing sound. I moved forward in a motion more lurch than step. The shrike did not move, did not shift its bloody gaze. "Go!" cried King Billy, stutter forgotten, voice exalted, a blazing mass of poetry in each hand. "Return to the pit from whence you came!" The shrike seemed to incline its head ever so slightly. Red light gleamed on sharp surfaces. "My lord!" I cried. Although to King Billy, or the apparition from hell, I did not know then, and know not now. I staggered the last few paces and reached for Billy's arm. He was not there. 1 second, the aging king was a hand's length from me, and in the next instant he was 10 meters away, raised high above the courtyard stones. Fingers, like steel thorns, pierced his arms and chest and thighs, but he still writhed, and my kantos burned in his fists. The shrike held him out like a father offering his son for baptism. "Destroy it!" Billy cried, his pinned arms making pitiful gestures. "Destroy it!"